Do you remember the thumbs up, let's do this, Leroy Jenkins?
I do.
Can you give us that? Can you give us that as a starting? Your best impression?
Yeah, fireworks. There we go.
You've never heard the thumbs up, let's do this? What game was that? It was like an old viral YouTube video.
It was real old. I had thumbs up, let's do this.
Leroy Jenkins. Does anyone remember that, or is that just me?
All right, thumbs up. Ready, guys? Let's do this. Leroy Jenkins!
Stahls, if you're ready to take custom apparel to the next level, Stahls is a leader in heat printing solutions. Whether you're a small business or just starting out, or an established brand that's scaling, use the code HUSTLER20. That gets you 20% off your next transfer order. Stahls has got the equipment, the transfers, and the support to help your shop grow and be a success.
Bruce, have you heard of Multicraft underscore daddy? I think last time I checked, he's at like 1,400 followers, which like, that's a pretty big deal. Because if you need ink supplies or a daddy or just entertaining content, Multicraft Screen Printing and Digital Supplies for over 50 years has been providing you with the top brands at competitive prices. You can mention the Printavo Pod and receive an extra 10% off your first order. Dave at Multicraft heard that we wanted to give away some supplies. So every episode, he gives away a case of PMI tape. So you can message him on Instagram. That's Multicraft underscore daddy. Leave him a nice comment. Tell him his videos are great. I think he's doing screen printing history videos recently. So we appreciate you, Dave, and the Multicraft team.
I got more giveaways. Easy Way gives away $250 of product credit every single month. Easyway.com/giveaway. Enter in your info and you are entered in. Make reclaiming screens a whole lot easier with Easy Way systems, chemicals, and equipment. So that's easyway.com/giveaway. Just drop your info in and have a chance to win the $250.
Sweet. If you need a solution to improve efficiency and reduce costs in your art department, you need to hit up GraphicSource. They're the industry-leading outsource options for your shop by truly becoming a part of your team. They plug and play with Printavo and other shop management softwares when it comes to SEPs, mockups, creative art, order management, embroidery, digitizing, back office admin, and customer service. There's no better company in our industry to work with. They have over 40 years in the game. They really know and understand shop needs and have a proven track record of success. On your first order for a vector SEP or embroidery order, you can get 50% off by mentioning the Printavo podcast. We use them at Campus Inc. and they are a staple to our business. So thanks so much, Graphic Source. Let's get to the episode. How old were you when YouTube came out, Matt?
Oh, dude. When did YouTube... I don't remember actually even thinking about YouTube as a thing until I was honestly already in my 20s. I mean, it might have been out by then, right? But I don't remember like actually caring about YouTube or thinking about going to YouTube till I was like 22, 23.
It was in, you're turning 40, so you got like 5-6 years on me. So I was in, I think I was like in the 8th grade or 7th grade when YouTube came out. Do you remember like the old stupid YouTube videos, like the originals?
That's all I remember it as, like when it was just really, really bad. It was, what was that other, like before TikTok and all that stuff, there was that other app.
Vine.
I loved Vine. My friends and I always made the stupidest Vines. Like I remember Vine before I remember anything YouTube.
I remember how hard it was to upload a YouTube video.
Yeah.
Like burning a CD.
It's so hard for some people, but yeah, it's super easy now.
It's crazy. What was your AIM screen name, Matt?
Oh, dude. my first one was just my last name backwards. So Marcotte Etichrom, like Etichrom 86 or something, the year I was born. And then I was a huge Rage Against the Machine fan. So then it was Rage 8614, I think. I think I was 14 when I made that screen name and I was born in 86. So, yep, just Rage 8614.
I bet you your MySpace. Oh man, I wish we could blast from the past and you could find your MySpace, like the HTML setups.
So pimped out. I was for sure in that, had music playing, custom animations, and that was in like the top 8. That was my first real experience learning anything computer related, was HTML for MySpace. The good old days.
I AIM away messages, like, sorry, I'm not here right now, walking through the spider web.
Oh, the good days, man. The good days. You look back now, you're like, I was an idiot.
We need to bring back AIM away messages. There should be away messages on Slack.
There are.
Away messages, because you would just go through and click and check everyone's profile and like kind of do your rounds and
see what's going on. Yeah.
Anyways, Matt, it's good to have you. Our good friend Bruce is being a dad, and he had a healthy baby girl, so super pumped for them. And so figured we'd bring some old friends on the pod to chat and chop it up. You've been obviously working on newer and crazier things. I just saw you updated Free Gang Sheet Maker yesterday, didn't you?
Oh, I spent the last like week and a half just overhauling it completely. But yeah, Free. I'm really reinforced its databasing. The problem was when you're getting to larger, like 10-foot long gang sheets and lots of pages of them, I was starting to hit some different rendering issues. So I kind of went through and just totally rebuilt the entire backend database and engine and how it's actually auto allocating, auto adjusting, just trying to make sure it's the best, easy to use experience. I've been tracking how long people are actively on it. It's taking under 2 minutes on average for most people to build a complex gang sheet and download it. So 2 minutes of time to be able to execute. And it's had, in the last week, it's had 400 new users that had not been on it in the prior 6 months.
So like you have to pay for hosting and stuff. How do the paid gang sheet makers feel about this?
That's a problem for them to worry about. I give a lot of things away for free, and it's kind of dumb of me because I should be making more money on some of these things that I'm not making money on. But to me, it's one of those things where if I have a problem for me or my print shop or the people who are close to me, my peers, my friends that I care about that I can help with, if I can make a solution, why make it for one? Why not make it for all? And so it's definitely more of a long-term investment. I'm definitely losing money on Free Gang Sheet Maker technically, right? But the amount of people that I'm helping, it's worth it. And being able to have people reach out to me, give ideas, give input, and make more things, I think drives the bus forward. If we all go forward, eventually it'll also be financially worth it for me, but it's filling my cup, right? Filling your cup and filling your wallet are two different things. And
I have an idea for you. Okay, you know how Wikipedia works? Like every year they ask for a donation, or like Reddit.
I took it down. I actually had a donation button for Free Gang Sheet Maker. So I could bring that back. And
or you could do like pay what you want for Matt Marcotte, because you put out so much stuff. Tell me, like ScreenPrint GPT is probably what, 2 or 3 years old now?
Yeah. It's going.
How's that working?
Fantastic. It's like 3,200 unique users now, still averaging a few hundred unique visits per day. The AI is still actively answering questions. It's funny. It's like every couple of days I can go look. I can't see who's having the conversations, but I can see the conversations, right? I don't know who's asking what, so I can't be like, you didn't know this, right? I can't do that kind of stuff, but I see a lot of new languages and I'm like, what language is this? And having to like quickly go find out like what part of the world is asking these questions. And it's getting further and further and helping big and small shops across the globe in, I think I'm like 19 different languages I've seen on it, which is wild.
When you built ScreenPrint GPT, this is like GPT 2.0 or 1.0 or whatever. And now there's all of these different models, right? Claude just came out with Fable and GPT 5.0 and Gemini's new thing. Do you just upgrade it in there, or can people use whatever they want, or like, how does that work?
Yeah. So the AI chat, I do have that upgrading to the most economical, most updated version. So right now that's on 5.4. So GPT 5.4 is what that's running, running off of. I'm using a third party engine that also costs a bunch of money every month to host that as a standalone outside of having to log in and having gate kept credentials for like logging into ChatGPT. So that is still running 5.4. Once they actually release 5.6, 5.5 will kind of become the standard. So I'll kind of keep pushing that up. So it helps with more and more. But the coolest thing is that the more you talk to it, the more other people talk to it, the smarter it's actually getting, right? So it's ever evolving and improving its own knowledge base while it's building itself out based off those questions. The other kind of fun part is with all these new AI models coming out, right? I'm able to build more and more on the free tools section. I would say it's nowadays, it's probably closer to a 30-70 split. About 30% of people are utilizing the AI throughout the day frequently. The other 70% are using the tools that I've created with AI that are in the free tools section of Screenprint GPT, kind of like how freegangsheetmaker.com is a free tool. I've got a whole other bunch of tools and more coming all the time underneath the login for screenprintgpt.com.
What do you think is what is the most popular tool that people are using right now of all your free tools?
The DTF, the download for the DTF half toner is still blowing up. That gets downloaded a couple times a day. Free download. It's a Photoshop plugin that really just kind of makes your DTF really ready to go. There's lots of them out there nowadays too, so I'm not saying this is by far the best one. It's the best free one. That one I can say confidently. And it's damn good. That one's used a ton. I've got a lot of pricing matrix helpers too that are being utilized frequently where people just don't know, like, hey, I got a job. It's DTF or it's screen printing. I don't quite know the break even. I have a tool for that to help you with your numbers to figure out when should I decide how many colors, how many pieces, which one's more economical for me to run screen print or DTF. So those tools are being used daily, frequently.
So Matt, I want to talk about AI adoption. I was just at the Make Ready Made Lab event last week, spoke for a couple of different sessions on it. They had a pretty killer event. It was like a field day at Made Lab, which was super, super cool and awesome. But I want to talk about AI adoption because I feel like shop owners know they need to use it. They might be behind, but then I'm hearing the, like, how do I get my employees to actually use it, to catch on, to like start becoming their everyday operating system? And I want to maybe stay away from artwork today. Can we put that bounding box? Because like, I think that we've beat that against a wall a zillion times and we're going to see shops that are like pro, not, yes, no, whatever. You choose your own adventure. Not here to convince you one way or the other if you're in the business to make money or not. I'm just going to say that. Sorry. But can we maybe talk about like how to get your employees and things that you've seen, maybe shops that you've seen that are doing it well, maybe the perspective of an employee and what might they might feel. Yeah, like where do we start here? I've got a couple things to share, but I'm curious to get your perspective.
Yeah, I think it's really that whole 2 second lean mentality, right? Going back to an OG, right? The book 2 second Lean, about how do you get your staff, your employees kind of amped up into being more effective, more efficient, right? So really identifying like, hey, how are you doing? What part of your day do you hate? What part is the hardest? What part do you feel is the biggest time suck or the biggest waste? How is this going for you, right? I think having those touch points with your staff is what you should be doing anyways. You should have your managers doing touch points, making sure you're doing kind of check-ins with people, and then getting their feedback. Like, hey, how's your job going? What part of it sucks? What part of it do you not enjoy? What part of it do you enjoy? And let's start to figure out what parts of it are the wasted motions, the motions they don't enjoy doing, and kind of bogs them down. And let's see if we can do anything about that. We think about that all the time in a print shop, right? Hey, manual press operator, what sucks about your job? Pulling a squeegee all day sucks. I hate this. My back hurts. My shoulders hurt. So we get an automatic press. We don't even think about it. We're like, yeah, of course, that makes sense. It's the natural next step. For some reason, though, people have a hard time with software or other processes and looking at ways to automate that, even though they're used to that conversation in terms of equipment for physical processes, but they forget that how we're interacting with our data, how we're looking for information, how we're kind of diving in for what is next is also an operational process that could be automated if we would get out of our own way. So I think the biggest thing is first, like, recognize if you're a problem. Are you the reason why you've not let other things besides your equipment become automated? Because chances are you are, right? And then starting to figure out what are those pain points, just like pulling a squeegee all day was a pain. What pain points do we have in our other processes throughout the entire shop and the entire business, front end and back end of the business, to see where are those pain points? What sucks? If I could go from a manual press to an automatic press, where can I do that in other places in the business too?
Okay. So I'm going to say something. So like, I had this on a slide and I want to get your feedback here. I said, Your job as a business owner isn't to install software. It's to build a business where learning feels safe and standing still doesn't. I'll say that again. Like, your job isn't to install software. It's to build a business where learning feels safe and standing still doesn't. I guess, how do you think, like, why do you think it's so hard for small businesses to teach software and automation and get their employees bought in? And like, where is the bottleneck?
If I'm going to be honest, I think the bottleneck is ego and self-worth misunderstanding.
Okay. Who, from whose perspective? We're going to get into like the psychology of this right now, I think.
The owner or the operational leader, right? Which may the same person may not be. So there's the whole E myth, right? You've got the whole idea is that every entrepreneur, you kind of have to start off with a technician, a manager, and then you become the entrepreneur, right? And a true entrepreneur is going to do exactly what you said. They're going to help make sure you have the right people, processes, and tech to have the business move forward, never stay stagnant, right? The problem is that most entrepreneurs in our industry, they are not a leader in the highest level of sense. So they're looking at things quarter to quarter, year to year. They're still stuck in the day to day. If they're lucky, the week to week. Most of them choose to, instead of evolving to their final form, that entrepreneur, right? They choose to be stuck in the manager or the technician role and be involved in day to day. And for a lot of them, it's a psyche issue of, well, if I'm not here, then I'm not needed. If I'm not needed, then what good am I? That's a bad logic trap that does not make any sense. And that's what I find is usually the issue for most shops being able to scale in whatever it is they're trying to scale. Steven, if you were in the shop every day trying to make sure they printed correctly, you'd probably be slowing them down and pissing them off, right? Stepping out of that, letting them make the mess, learn their mistakes, and then grow is how you ended up with a badass print shop, right? You can't be in the way at all times. So I think the biggest hurdle is the owner's psyche of them realizing that they're doing their job right, they're not needed, right? And that's the biggest issue, I think, right? They're needed in other ways, other places, but not how they're historically used to being needed. They're used to being needed in the technician way or a manager way. They're going to have new, bigger needs to identify, but they don't know how to look in that bigger picture direction. They've been looking because they grew from being a technician to a manager up to that spot.
Yeah, I think something that I notice when I hear shop owners, I don't want to say the word complain about their employees, but maybe like talk about the riff that they have, right? A lot of times, like in fabric and stuff like that, we'll vent about what's happening is you can be firm with an employee to do a job that they don't like to do. I need you to shoot screens. I need you to show up. I need you to do a good job. You don't have to love it, but you need to do it and you need to do it well enough. And here you go. It's a very linear, like, I need you to unload shirts. I need you to stack shirts. And the employee doesn't have to love it, but they just have to respect the job enough to show up and do it. And there's not a lot of empathy. You're just like, dude, you need to show up and do this, right? When it comes to learning, you can't give the same approach. Hey, I'm paying you to come up and learn this and you need to learn it and you need to like it. Because like that, and so I think that's short-sighted. And so I think what has to happen is when you want an employee to learn something and truly learn it and grasp it, you actually have to spend time understanding their perspective. And this is something that I sometimes don't do well, is I look past their perspective. And so like, I think it might be, you know, say it's an employee and you're like, hey, because this is something I struggled with, Matt. How long have we been on Replit? The two of us.
Ooh, year and a half, 2 years?
February 2025, I think, is when somewhere around that time. And me and you get super giddy about it, right? We jump into it, we learn it, we're like, we're just, you know, you have to call a doctor for you after 4 hours, you know, like this Matt can't go to sleep. I showed this tool and built stuff for a bunch of different people on my team, and I showed it to them a year and a half ago. And I'm like, you got to learn this. This is awesome. You got to learn this. And it wasn't until this April that a couple of them caught the bug. So it was a year and a half later, almost, or a year. And I was like, where did I mess up? Like, imagine if I would start to be like, man, imagine if they actually caught on when I showed this to them. You know, we have vibe coded and built more things in the last 60 days than we have in the last 3 years at Campusync. Because I've had 7 or 8 employees jump on board with this. But I think the miss that I had was I didn't understand their perspective. And so it's like these employees, I expected them to be just as excited as I was for something new. And I don't think that's the case. I think it's the opposite. Most employees are skeptical. What is this? And then a lot of employees are worried and scared. Is it fair to see their perspective? Or like as an owner, you're like,
I think empathy is missing in our world in general. And I think that always empathy needs to be a leader in every decision, every conversation, everything that we're looking at, trying to understand the narrative of where they're coming from, why they're coming from there. Because it'll help you understand how to guide things. So I do think it is a bit of a miss to try to teach somebody without understanding how to meet them where it is. Think about like, for me, maybe not for you, for me, learning math in school, I was like, there's no application. I do not care about this. Right. And then all of a sudden you're dealing with working in the real world and you have spreadsheets and a lot of data and you're like, shit, I wish I knew math. And you have to learn math the hard way. And now I'm good at math. Right. So it's an understanding of like, if it's not applicable and you can't actually take what they know and what they're used to and show it to them in a way that matters to them, why would they care? Right. It's square peg, circle hole. And for an employee, an hourly employee, to ever have as much onus or care, or I like to call it give a damn, as the owner, that's also not going to happen. Right. The owner's always going to care the most. They should. Right. It's not going to be the same to be an owner and be a screen washer to care the same. Right. There's a lot to learn from the screen washer still, if you can learn to meet them where they are and get ideas from them. So, yeah, I mean, I think, to your point, right, a year and a half ago, even me and you talking to our friends, right, in a lot of the same text threads, we told them a year and a half ago, too, we were in Replit, and most of them did not jump aboard and jump in. Now, a bunch of them are like, oh, we're getting in. We're like, yeah, and we've run like 10 circles around you. Welcome, right? So I think it's the same thing is, how do we share the excitement that like guys like you and I get about this? How do we figure out the right way to share that excitement and get their like mental buy-in? Well, everything you said is accurate. It's scary. It's new. I honestly do think that if AI doesn't scare you, your eyes aren't open, right? AI should terrify you, but it should be so scary that you learn it, right? AI is Fable 5 from Anthropic was open for 3 days and the government shut it down. I did more with Fable 5 in that 3 days than I felt like I've been able to do with multiple different tools in the last 3 months. It was like, it went down. I was kind of like, that kind of makes sense. It was a little terrifyingly good, right? It's going to come back. They're going to have new models, new benchmarks. It's going to get crazy, right? So if you're not scared so much that you're like, I have to be part of this, I am worried for people long-term that do not jump on that bandwagon a bit to understand, at least have an idea of how to work with it, that it's going to get harder for those people who are not jumping aboard that ship.
Yeah. So I think like, a natural resistance like to something new is not a character flaw. Me and you are early adopters. So like we're like we get excited and giddy with newness. But people naturally, if we're early on the adoption curve of new technology, right? Me and you are all the way on the left hand side. Most people aren't early adopters. So that if they are resistant to something new, that doesn't mean they're bad. And that's not a character flaw. In fact, me and you are probably like, it's probably us, a little too crazy, right? And so like, I think it's important to understand what our brain, when like resistance is a threat response, not a character flaw. And our brain hears that when our identity might be threatened, we think of it as like a physical threat. We fight, freeze, quietly sabotage. And it's like, it's a way we're wired, not our attitude. And so I think we have to actually spend time taking their perspective and actually sitting with them and being like, okay, you know, you probably feel threatened right now. This is probably really scary. And they might be like, well, I don't feel threatened, but I do feel scared. Okay. Why do you feel scared? And just letting them feel scared and like getting on the same wavelength on them. Because what you really want them to do is to be like, I'm going to do this with you. We're going to do this together, right? And so I guess like trying to spend time empathizing with them first and having an open environment to do it is probably the most important thing. But then I think you also have to be very, very consistent as a business owner with learning together. So like what practice might, I've got some ideas of some things we've done. What are you seeing well across the industry of business owners that are getting their companies to really adopt AI? What has to happen?
Definitely, like you said, having the candid conversation. I know I won't throw any names out there because we work with a lot of shops, right? But I know there's a handful of shops out there that have had to have hard conversations with multiple departments and made it clear, hey, this is what the future is going to be. We're going to have AI. We're going to use AI. And I need to start seeing motions out of you folks that include AI. And if I don't see them, I'm going to have harder conversations with you folks. So kind of making it clear, like, look, I'm not expecting you to go from zero to a Steven right now, right? But I need to see motion. And if I don't see motion, you're not only slowing me down, you're holding me back, because the world's moving forward faster than ever before. So you not moving forward at all is actually making me have a bigger delta from where we are to where we need to be, right? So I can't let you stay in one place anymore. We have to move forward together. So I think having those candid conversations, but then like you're saying, and I think in a very astute way, like you have to be aware that fear is usually real and you need to do some discovery there, right? You need to be curious. Why are they afraid? Why aren't they moving forward, right? And sometimes it's a matter of helping them dictate between using AI for their personal life versus you're on my time and my dime right now. We're using AI for my time and my dime. That can be different. If you don't want to go use AI at home, that's fine, right? If you want to be, Mennonite, right? They don't have electricity in their home, but they go to work and they use power tools. Cool, right? You can have that divide on your personal time and your personal life, and you do not need to be a Matt or a Steven who's up until 4 a.m. wasting a lot of AI credits, right? But when you're here and we're working, we need to be making that forward motion. So I think that discovery with them and that empathy of understanding where they're at, what their fears are, but also laying the line down pretty openly and honestly of like, look, I hear you at home, your own personal time. I get it. Here, we have no option but to do it. So I need you to help me. Let's find a way to do this together in a way that you feel comfortable with and not scared about.
Have you ever heard the yes and framework? We did this at Print Hustlers. Remember? And
loved it. Yes. So, and improv 101.
Heck yeah. So like what you're taught is empathy is not optionality. Like you can be warm about the how, but firm about the what. Hey, I hear you. I hear that you're scared. I hear that you might be skeptical. I know that this might be really challenging. I know that you might feel threatened, and we're still doing this. what support do you need to get the job done? Right. And so like you can do those things. And I think I've had a lot of shop owners ask like, hey, can you come in and teach my team how to use AI? Like you've probably got this, Matt. Bringing someone in to do something versus actually being an owner and doing it with them. What do you think are the pros, cons? What works the best? Because I do want to spend a couple minutes here.
So there's a couple of ways, right? It kind of depends on what kind of a leader you are and what your expectations are on your business. Right. Like it's one thing to say like, oh, I would never expect my employees something I can't do. But that doesn't really work here. Right. Steven, no offense. I don't think you can run your automatic press as well as your best press operator, nor should I. Do I think you should try? Right. So I think that if that's the mentality, I know if that's the mentality, I think it's if you have a champion in your business that's already showing those signs. Right. For my day job at Inktavo, right? That's kind of my thing. So they're kind of like, hey, Matt, you help us with this, right? Because it's definitely in my world. So if you have a champion that's not you, empower them, right? And then empower them to be a leader. If you're the champion, then you have to be the leader. I know for me, how I kind of cut my teeth and earn respect in the print world, I was running a large shop and I had to go out on press and prove I actually knew what I was talking about, right? I think you have to have a champion or a leader in everything to prove that you're willing to get in the ditches, you're willing to make a mess, make mistakes, learn from them and grow and work together to get to outcomes. And so somebody in your business has to already be a champion. It doesn't have to be the owner, but you have to have a champion. If you don't have a champion, paying for an outsider to come in and teach you something is not going to magically create a champion. You're going to spend a bunch of money, which will take, right? But you're not going to be able to go forward the way that you want to. as opposed to spending some time figuring out who could be that champion and working together through discovery with them. What do they not like? What do they wish they could do better? Let's work together. Let's use resources. If you have somebody who could be a champion in shop that is like AI curious, put it on their calendar that every week they should be doing a couple hours of research and then putting together an attempt at some sort of AI tool using whatever the cheapest available AI option you can get is. Start making it part of the actual day and the process and the expectations and grow it slowly. Just paying for somebody to come in and teach you how to print some new techniques, but no one cares. Cool. You're never going to do it. Teaching somebody to come in to teach you AI, but no one cares. Cool. No one's going to do it, right? You have to have that curiosity and somebody who's going to own being that champion, who is not going to get easily swayed and is willing to learn, willing to fail and okay with it.
Have you seen that YouTube video called How to Start a Movement?
No.
You've never seen this before? I am going to text you this right now. So if you guys go on YouTube, and this is like one of my favorite YouTube videos. It's called How to Start a Movement. It's like a TED Talk. It's a famous TED Talk. And basically what it is it's a video of people at a park. And there's one, and it's narrated kind of like Steve Irwin style. Are you watching it right now? It's narrated Steve Irwin style. And it's like, this is how a movement is made. First, there's the first mover. And it's a guy just dancing like, it looks like they're at a Phish concert. So I don't know. They're just like, it's a bunch of hippies or something like that. And they're just dancing. And it's like one guy's just dancing alone like an idiot. And then all of a sudden one person joins them and they're like, ah, yes, there's the early adopter. And it points it out. And like, this person is the risk taker and they are believing in this, you know, the first mover. And oh, a third has joined. And then all of a sudden the entire park is dancing. And this is like, this is how a movement is started and the psychology of movement and all this stuff. It is the coolest video. And so that's sort of, I've been showing this to my team and I'm like, you know, we win not when it's just me dancing like an idiot or Mike or Sean or Adam. It's when everyone's dancing together and showing each other things. And that is how we make a change. And it wasn't until January this year I basically came out on a meeting and was like, we are doing this and I'm doing it with you and we are going to start to build a habit. And we did a 20-day challenge where every single employee in the company had to do something for 5 minutes a day. And it wasn't until probably 4 months later that I started to feel the like the motion of it and the power of it, where now I think I have 15 seats on Replit. I don't want to tell you what my Replit bill is right now.
Dude, I'm already picturing based off what I know my single person Replit bill is. I can't imagine, but it's worth it, I'm sure.
And, you know, part of that challenge was like, hey, what I learned was people were starting to build things that I never would have thought. And, you know, a guy in my dark room who's actually a screen printer for a long time was like, hey, I made us a little tool for us to reorder ink. So we don't have to email Dave Eggers. We could just, it could just go right to him. And I'm like, yes. You know? And so, you know, we're just, my production manager, Chad, he's like, I need to figure out a way to broadcast text messages to the whole team on their schedules for the day. And he made his own app to broadcast texts, right? And a guy that runs all of the different social media accounts was like, I need a way to be able to, you know, we pay for Hootsuite and this, but I want to be able to see all the social media accounts and build a dashboard just for myself. And he made that, right? And so like, none of those ideas came from me, but it did take me sort of being the first clown and creating a space for it. And I got really frustrated.
I'm curious with that. So, and it's something that I find happens to me. So I'm curious if you're seeing it too. Let's say that the guy who built the ink ordering, right? He probably already had to do that job and he probably hated having to do it. So he built a tool that made it easier. But even if for some reason it doesn't go all that much faster, I bet he likes doing it more because he created the solution he's using to actually do it. So let's say that maybe speed doesn't change all that much, but buy-in, accuracy, mood, up, right? And so like Are you seeing that these people who are now kind of feeling like masters of their own micro universe? How is the vibe? How is the feel? How is the guy who's in a dark room who's usually kind of like coming out the end of the day like a troll, like I'm angry, right? How is his vibe at the end of the day?
That is probably the coolest and most rewarding part, and something that in my one-on-ones, I tell him, I'm like, hey, you changed your career for the rest of your life by making this decision because you are now a builder with me and you're not a doer, you're a builder. And like the spirit is really, really cool. And whatever they make, I celebrate. I kind of don't care. I'm just like, hell yeah, I love it. What'd you, sweet. You know, because you just have to get this mindset of I'm trying to make this place better. I'm trying to make this place better. I'm trying to make this place better. And the irony of all of this, it's the employees that I least suspected to grab onto this, guys in my dark room, older guys on production, right? People that were not tech. What's really funny is my production manager made this awesome tool, Chad, love him to death. And I was like, can you record a Loom for me and show me this? And he took his camera out to record a Loom. Like he didn't even know about screen share on Loom because he just makes SOPs. And I'm like, oh, that's hilarious. You vibe coded a whole app and you didn't know how to record a Loom. Like, I love you, you know? But yet the Gen Zers, the ones younger than me, are the hardest to turn.
I think I know why, right? I was thinking about this the other day, actually. I think that in the 90s and early 2000s, right, early internet, we were kind of like the future. And we started the ability to like become dreamers, right? To really think about all the different hoverboards and flying cars and where's this going to go. And we were kind of like writing sci-fi novels in our heads of where we could go. And then it didn't deliver. Right. And I think the next generation, they just had these things in their hands and they didn't have to dream quite as much. They had access. They had distraction. Right. So I think part of it is like we have a different look on technology and future than the next generation, And ours is different than our parents' generation. Right. Because how you interact with it kind of adjust that state. What I think you're saying, what I love about where we're at right now is, realistically, for anything, you usually need to have a dreamer and a captain, right? Somebody can kind of think of the ideas and somebody who can actually execute on the ideas. Now with AI, it's really just if you can think of it, you can be the captain now, right? Where it really empowers, if you have a fun idea or a thought or a dream, AI is going to help you build it. You don't necessarily have to have the person who's got the business savvy that can actually execute on that. To grow it, you might, but to actually execute on a proof, on a tool, on something else. Before AI, I had lots of ideas, but I couldn't write that much code, right? Now, that's not a barrier I worry about, right? So I'm not surprised, actually, that it's probably more of like the millennials, and I think you're a millennial technically. I don't know.
I'm a millennial, 91, baby. No, it's the ones in their 20s that are like not adapting as much. They're harder to crack, which I thought that wouldn't be the case.
Maybe it's because they think it's going to impact them more. I don't know. Or we're not finding the right way to tie to them. We're not finding the right empathy narrative to pull, right? Like what's different about somebody in their 20s now than somebody in their 30s right now?
Yeah. So what's really interesting, like Chad and I, and Chad's older than me, we were just in our warehouse and they're redoing a bunch of inventory stuff and they've neatly written on the boxes of what's in them and they have to take inventory. I'm like, Chad, what if we just took a picture of this entire rack and see if Gemini could put it on a spreadsheet for us so that we don't have to go through and count everything? And we did it. This is literally an hour and a half ago. He's like, holy shit. And me and him are just standing there. We're like, whoa. But you know what? He's been in the inventory and supply chain business for the last 20 years in grocery. And he's like, dude, he's like, we had to painfully do this with lettuce every week. Like, you know? And so I think what it is that the younger generation are they fresh grads. They have these degrees and they think their careers are threatened, or they're having an identity crisis of like, wait, I went to school for this. And what do you mean Canva? I actually I've been on this Canva kick recently. If you look at the stock price, private stock price of Canva versus stock price of Adobe, do you see Adobe's at an all-time low? Do you know this? I think they're in trouble.
I've been saying for years, I think Canva's going to buy Adobe.
Canva's not even, whatever. Like, I think something's going to happen, but like the Adobe, the vote, the public vote on Adobe keeps going down and down and down. The public vote on Canva keeps going up and up and up. And yet my youngest artists are like, I hate Canva. I'm not going to use it. I'm like, did you just see what they released yesterday? Like layers and this and that. I'm like, why are we using Photoshop for graphic design, you know, for flyers, right? Like for
point. It's a mixture of both. I think that's it's definitely, they haven't felt the pain, right? If you're doing it long enough, you know, it sucks and it's a time killer and you care about getting to the other side of this thing, then you're going to use a tool to make it faster. If you don't know the pain, you don't have all that time and you don't recognize what tools even have at your disposal or what they're for, right? You show me a bunch of tools to build a house, I'm not going to know what the hell any of them are for. I don't build fucking houses. Right. I build a house for a couple of years with the wrong tools, and all of a sudden you show me the tools, I might be like, oh, it might change the game. So how do you force somebody into the other side of that mental state without that time? I think that's the dilemma that we're all gonna be stuck in right now.
What's funny is we work with hundreds of students across the country. They're really good at Canva, which is wild. So like the ones that are 20 years old are really good at Canva. The ones in their late 20s are not as good, but they know they need to use it, but they're like, they're still Photoshop Illustrator. And then I think the teams that are a little bit older are just like, oh, this is night and day. I should probably just use this, right? So like, there's this like maturity difference gap, drives me nuts.
I mean, it is also that college, right? If you paid for a college degree and now you're paying off debt for it and someone's telling you, yeah, don't use what you learned though. We got to use this. It's an internal conflict, but you're not going to help yourself not doing it. You're going to make yourself less valuable by sticking to your guns in that aspect, right?
Yeah. My business partner, Jed, who was on Corel One, like he can digitize. He's 65 years old. He got out Rubylith a couple like and clip art books and like letter books. Did you ever do this? Maybe you did it in art school. Whereas like wax lettering and like four colors and like the Rubylith, he's like, look, I could only do one of these a night, you know? And we had a camera enlarger and then a computer came out and it changed my life. You know, I could get six pieces of art out a night. And so it's funny that like, I don't think the older generation is anti it. I think it's probably the ones that are like younger. I don't know. It's totally blowing my mind.
They're kind of clutching their pearls with their recent degrees. It's kind of what it sounds like, right? But it's the same point. Like, again, Jed knows the pain of cutting Ruby. He knows the pain of like manual halftone dotting, right? Of actually having to do all this stuff where like you take it for granted when you have Photoshop or Illustrator, right? You take it for granted, all these things, but he knows the pain. So he sees an even better tool, right? You're like, yeah, absolutely. Let's go to the even better tool because he recognizes historically, tools have gotten the job done better, faster, stronger, smarter, right? Some people think that they just paid for that ultimate and they're not going to move when they're going to get left.
He's like, you guys think you know what a halftone is? Let me show you what a halftone is, son. He's like, see this? Yeah, it's crazy. But it's also like, I don't know, it's inspiring. It's also scary. So what do you do about those employees that are holding it out and holding the organization back?
I think that's where you do have to have that they kind of call it a come to Jesus moment, right? That reckoning a bit, where it is that candid conversation, right? Where you tell them this, look, I am the captain of this ship. This is where the ship is going. I would like you to help be a part of that. I need you to buy into that. If you're not going to help be a part of that, then I wish you well on somebody else's ship, right? And being able to actually say like, look, you might be an all-star in how things have been, but you're not willing to move forward to how things are going to be. And you're not helping me learn how to stay efficient and effective in a world that is changing quickly. And I think some people are going to have some hard conversations and some hard terminations that maybe 3-4 years ago might have been like, oh, I could never do it without that person. If they're not helping you become leaner and meaner and more effective, right, then they are holding you back. Because again, staying in one place while the world moves forward means you're going backwards.
If an employee is not helping you get leaner and meaner, they are rowing against you. And I think that's the hardest part to deal with right now, is it almost makes you sick a little bit. But you can't, I feel like you can't hold up your business for one person.
Here's how I think about this. If you caught an employee taking money out of the till, what would you do? So if an employee is not helping you make more money, they're essentially doing the same thing, aren't they?
But how long do you put up with that? Because a lot of it could also be the owner not giving them the right environment to learn. Because as business owners, as small shop owners, we do not spend enough time on education, training, learning, resources. Like, we're not. We don't have HR departments, continuous education. Like, we fail at that. So how long can you give them to adopt themselves? Like, what is it, a year? Is it 6 months? Is it, you know, what is it?
I think let's use your example of Replit, right? It took you probably, like you said, a year of proving it to everybody else. You probably, maybe 6 months in, you could have proved it and put your foot down then, but you waited a year of like, okay, I'm doing all these things and I'm able to do this and look what I've built, right? So leading by example. I think if you don't already have that champion that can help kind of ring everybody else in to do these things, then you have to be the champion. You have to lead by example. And if that means, hey, look, this is where the ship is going and I want you to help be a part of that. So we together are going to spend this time block every week and we are going to work through these processes together. Or, hey, look, the expectation of your role is to be the leader for the company. You're a high level manager. This is what I need you to be doing. And it's not an option. It has to get done. So how can I support that? What do you need for me to see these outcomes? How can I help enable that? What tools do I need to pay for? How do I get you there and get their ownership and onus into what they need to execute? But I think setting the tone of, are you going to be the leader of that? Or are your expectations for that person to be the leader? And then encouraging them and empowering them and being realistic. You can't be like, hey, you're the general manager. You need to be automating all this shit by tomorrow. No, that's impossible, right? But making sure that they're doing their, they have time allocated to focus on it, or you're doing it with them, and then kind of growing that together until you've drank your own Kool-Aid and they've drank the Kool-Aid. And now all of a sudden, all y'all are dancing together, right?
Yeah. I think my goal, I just texted you a gift. I'm going to tell everyone about this gift that I've made for you. I think the goal is to find, if you have a team of 10, or a team of 8, or a team of 20, or a team of 100, every single week you focus on one employee to get them to catch the bug. Because once you get them to catch the bug, it's a runaway train. And instead, you know, like, I tried to go broad and wide with the whole company, which I still consistently do. I made all these Slack channels, did these challenges, but then it was like one-to-one. And I would just like be like, okay, you're my target this week, and I'm going to work with you on AI, and we're going to do this together. And then next week, it's like, ooh, who can I activate? Almost to the point of like, can I get all these light switches on? So I have a 20-day AI challenge, kind of like your fitness challenge, Matt. We basically did this thing at Campus Inc. where for 20 days, which is about a month without weekends, every single day we had an AI challenge for every single employee in every department. And it only took 5 minutes. Are you reading this? Yeah, I'm sending it to you. And if you email me, steven@campus.inc, steven@fabric.inc, I will send it to you for free, and give you the link to it. But it basically is the ability to, it says it takes five extra minutes to be great. And to try and get your shop to adopt it. So shoot me an email. Happy to give it away. Matt, you just, hold on to that one, Matt. You can try that out or make it better. And I'll tell you, actually, the way I made this document, how beautiful is this deck, by the way, that I made? It's beautiful. I didn't make it. I need to do a better job with Claude Cowork, but I had all these Slack channels running and all of these spreadsheets for everyone to track it. And I said, go back through every single Slack channel and find every challenge for every day and build me a beautiful deck that I can give to people in our industry. So it tells you what tools you use, whether it's Gemini, Claude, you name it. And then my goal is that shops can take this and steal it, make their own, but we can push the industry forward. Any last thoughts, Matt, on any new innovative things that are coming down the AI world, print world, that you would like to tell people about in the last couple of minutes we have here?
Yeah. I mean, realistically, you need to be messing with some sort of interactive AI, not just talking to ChatGPT, asking it broad questions. Stephen just mentioned Claude Cowork. I think that's one of the biggest unlocks for most people is to learn how to use Claude Cowork. Get Claude, pay for the subscription, and just go to YouTube, right? And Google how to use Claude Cowork and watch it and work with it. It's the biggest unlock, right? It can actively be a part of your data. You can let it into your Slack to read things and give synopsis on things. You can let it into your inbox if you trust it. You can let it into certain folders. It can actually create things. I've got it in my G Drive, so I can have it like create things and actually put it in my G Drive. So it's on the cloud immediately. It can read data that's in there too. Basically having your own VA, right? Your own virtual assistant that can look through whatever data you pointed at. If you're not trying to speed up your time on memory and processing and organizing data by using something like Claude Cowork, you're going too slow, right? It's not like it's creating new fresh data. It's using the data you've already got in multiple places, disjointed, and bringing it together to be cleaner and better than ever. And that's lean, right? That's making the best process. You took an antiquated process that was manual in lots of places and put a beautiful deck together with a couple prompts, right? So realistically, you got to start using some of these tools. If anybody's in Google already and they have like a G Suite, basic G Suite, you probably have Google AI Studio, or you have Google Gemini, or you have Notebook LM. If you already have G Suite, use these things for the love of God. Notebook LM alone, holy shnikes. What it can do for you, I take books. I'll find like PDFs of books online and I'll feed it to Notebook LM. It'll make like an 8-minute video for me to watch where it's got like visuals and I'm going to actually have my ADHD brain pay attention and learn it, right? I can have it make slide deck presentations based off of whatever I put in there too. It connects to your Google Drive, right? And it's baked in. If you have Google Suite, you have Notebook LM, right? My wife uses it. She's in nursing school. She uploads her whole thing and makes flashcards learning, right? So all these things, you got to just start playing with them. If you're an owner of a business or you're running a business and you're not already in this, you have to start today. Just start somewhere. Be curious. Be creative. Follow Stephen's 20-day challenge. You do it to yourself first for 20 days. See how it goes. Get better. Be faster. Be stronger. And then implement that.
Yeah. So go ahead and email me. And then Matt, you're not in Fabric. We'll get you in there eventually, but we have in Fabric, we have a channel that's just Fabric AI. And this is where we're just riffing with each other and showing each other off on all this stuff. And it's pretty cool to see what people have been building. So, we're going to be launching a couple groups here in the spring. So let us know. All right, Matt, thank you for joining us for another episode of Print Hustlers. Print Hustlers, we'll see you on the next one. Take it easy.
Thanks so much for listening. Hopefully that was informative. Don't forget to subscribe. Don't forget to like. Don't forget to hit the bell for notifications if you enjoyed this video. If you enjoy all the stuff we're putting out, it's really helpful. We love to just be able to see it. That means that we're doing a good job. To subscribe, hit the bell for notifications and hit the like button. And I'll see you in the next episode. Bye.